Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for June 23rd, 2015. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'm talking with David Sweat and John Hablitz about the role of DNA methylation in forming memories. Changes in both neuronal morphology and neuronal activity are important for making and recalling memories. These changes affect the number or strength of synapses, the structures through which neurons communicate with one another. Synaptic plasticity is the term that refers to these phenomena collectively, and it can include changes in the amount of neurotransmitter released into a synapse by a presynaptic cell, or changes in the sensitivity of the postsynaptic cell to that neurotransmitter. Recent studies have indicated that DNA methylation, which affects the expression of genes, plays a role in synaptic plasticity and memory formation. This week in Science Signaling, a study from the groups of John Hablitz and David Sweat at the University of Alabama at Birmingham reports that DNA methylation is important for memory because it affects scaling of glutaminergic synapses. Sweat and Hablitz spoke to me from Birmingham. Dr. Sweat and Dr. Hablitz, welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
David, synaptic plasticity is the collective term for changes in the strength of synaptic connections. What sorts of things can cause those changes?
A lot of things can cause changes in synaptic connections at a lot of different levels. First of all, just our daily experiences cause changes in synaptic connections in the brain that are part of how we lay down memories. And that's a big part of what makes us who we are as individuals. In the brain, in the central nervous system itself, plastic changes, changes in the strength of the connections between nerve cells is dependent on firing of the neurons that connect to each other. So typically a cell that fires another follower cell repeatedly and with high strength, that connection tends to get stronger. And then other specific forms of neuronal firing patterns can lead to a decrease in the strength of the connection, or growth processes where there's actually an increase in the number of physical connections between neurons. So I would say the vast majority of the individual neurons in the central nervous system have this property of synaptic plasticity that depends on the firing activity of the neurons that are connected to each other.
At the cell biological level, what does synaptic plasticity mean? How are those changes implemented at a fine level?
It kind of falls into two broad categories. So what we're talking about is a synaptic connection is a presynaptic neuron connects up with a postsynaptic follower neuron. So the first neuron fires and that activity leads to typically an increase in glutamate, for example, the synapse between those two and causes some depolarization of the postsynaptic cell. So you can strengthen a connection by changing either the nerve cell on the front end or the nerve cell on the back end. And that's called presynaptic change or a postsynaptic change, respectively. And so you could have things like an increase in the amount of neurotransmitter that's released in the presynaptic cell as a broad category of one type of mechanism. And the second major broad category is that the postsynaptic cell could increase its sensitivity and its responsiveness to the neurotransmitter that's being released. And so the same amount of neurotransmitter would give a bigger response in the postsynaptic cell. So you can have changes in the neurotransmitter release from the presynaptic neuron, or you can have changes in responsivity in the postsynaptic neuron to the same amount of neurotransmitter.
Your paper looks at how DNA methylation affects synaptic plasticity at the level of the synapse. But before we get to the results of your mechanistic studies on synapses, how does DNA methylation affect synaptic plasticity at the level of memory in the whole animal?
There's been a lot of work that's been done over that over the last really 10 years or so, I guess, at this point. DNA methylation can affect memory in several different ways. Courtney Miller, who is a postdoctoral fellow in my lab, and Farah Lubin did experiments where they manipulated DNA methylation in the hippocampus and found that you could block memory formation when you perturb DNA methylation state. Guoping Van's lab at UCLA did a very nice series of studies using knockout animals to knock out DNA methyltransferases and showed that you could diminish the animal's memory capacity. So At one level, you can say that manipulating DNA methylation can block memory formation. Another kind of experiment that has been done is to go in after an animal has formed a memory and go into the cortex and manipulate DNA methylation. And in that circumstance, you can actually reverse an established memory. You can erase an established memory. So DNA methylation is involved in storage of memory. So you can wipe out a memory by manipulating DNA methylation. And then Hilmar Bading's group in Germany has done a very nice study where they actually, in an aged animal, could restore memory capacity, so improve memory, by putting a DNA methyltransferase into the aged animal's brain. And so DNA methylation has been found to be necessary for memory formation, for memory storage, and in fact, for memory enhancement in some cases where there were deficits in memory. So it can do a lot of different things to a lot of different aspects of memory, depending on the particular circuits that are involved, particular neurons that are involved, and the kind of physiologic state of the animal.
In what sorts of ways could DNA methylation affect synaptic plasticity?
That's a big question. It's a big challenge, because if you think about it, a methylation of a cytosine in the nucleus in a neuron is about as far away from a synapse, both in a physical sense and kind of a molecular sense, as you can get. So that question is one of the big challenges in this emerging field that's called neuroepigenetics, which is how can a chemical modification of a specific gene in a nucleus affect synaptic function? And the kind of short answer that seems reasonably clear at this point is that it's through regulating gene transcription, so the readout of genes from the DNA. And then there's a huge black box that we're still trying to figure out, in aggregate, all of the people who work in this area, as to what specific genes have their transcription altered in response to a plasticity or a memory event that can then regulate a downstream functional consequence like synaptic connectivity. So it's still largely unknown, but the prevailing hypothesis is that there are changes in activity-dependent gene transcription that are involved in DNA methylation contributing to synaptic plasticity and memory formation.
And the relationship between DNA methylation and synaptic plasticity goes both ways, right? DNA methylation can affect transcription of genes that contribute to synaptic plasticity, and likewise, synaptic plasticity could involve changes in DNA methylation to maintain synaptic strength.
Yes, and that's exactly the case. You know, these changes in methylation are activity-dependent in the neuron, so firing patterns change them, but then, you know, it's a circular effect. It's a feedback type of effect. Those changes in methylation then affect that neuron's capacity to either signal to a follower neuron or to even control its own properties of its cell membranes and its own synapses.
John, the type of synaptic plasticity that you focused on in the study is glutamatergic synaptic scaling. What is that?
Glutamatergic synaptic scaling is a type of synaptic plasticity that is widely studied. Glutamate is one of the major excitatory neurotransmitters in the brain, and it's the principal means whereby neurons communicate with one another. And we understand those mechanisms pretty well in terms of how glutamate is released from the presynaptic terminal and activates a variety of glutamate receptors on the postsynaptic side. And what people have been interested in is understanding how synaptic plasticity involves changes in glutamate transmission. Synaptic scaling is also referred to sometimes as homeostatic plasticity. And what it refers to is the fact that when you change the level of activity in a network, either by depressing the amount of activity in neurons or by enhancing the amount of neurons, you get a change in the size of the synaptic responses that are seen in the postsynaptic membrane. So an example of synaptic scaling would be if you depressed firing in cells for a very long period of time, they would upregulate the size of the postsynaptic glutamate responses. And this increase in glutamatergic transmission is referred to as homeostatic synaptic scaling. And it tries to normalize or regulate the activity of the synapses in response to chronic changes in activity of the neurons.
One of the things that's really interesting about synaptic scaling,
David Sweat,
is that specific forms of scaling can move all the 10,000 synapses that are on a neuron up or down in a very coordinated kind of fashion. So it's a really a cell-wide, neuron-wide coordinated change that can move all the synapses by the same fraction to increase it or decrease it. And so that's part of why it's called scaling, because it happens at a cell-wide level. What's particularly interesting about that in the context of DNA methylation and epigenetic mechanisms in general is epigenetic mechanisms are themselves, essentially by definition, changes that affect the entire cell. So they're changing the readout of a particular gene across the entire neuron. And so it was one of the kind of conceptual appeals to think about synaptic scaling being regulated by DNA methylation, because DNA methylation is exactly the kind of molecular mechanism that can affect every synapse in the cell to the same extent at the same time. So there was this kind of conceptual marriage of the phenomenon of synaptic scaling with the fact of the matter that epigenetic mechanisms always trigger changes that can occur at a cell-wide level.
And so what did you find in this study? How does DNA methylation affect glutaminergic synaptic scaling?
We manipulated DNA methylation using drugs and gene knockdown kinds of approaches, and found that if we put in these drugs that could trigger a decrease in methylation in the cell, that we saw an upscaling of the cell's synaptic strength broadly across the cell that was very reminiscent of the kind of activity-dependent upscaling that you could see in neurons as part of this homeostatic plasticity. So we first found that triggering decreases in methylation could themselves induce this upscaling of synaptic strength in the neuron. We also found that this effect was dependent on a known regulator of active DNA demethylation, the TET oxygenase pathway. And so the drugs that triggered changes in methylation, that effect was due to a known pathway for active demethylation in neurons. And so that was sort of comforting that the drugs were acting in the way that we thought they should be acting, that is through a demethylation-dependent pathway. We also saw that changes in synaptic strength that occurred cell-wide occurred in what's referred to as a multiplicative fashion, which means that the population of synapses, by and large, were changing by the same factor across the entire cell. So again, it was consistent with the idea that the DNA methylation was controlling a cell-wide effect, and that cell-wide effect was happening in a coordinated fashion where the synapses were changing by the same amount across the entire population of synapses for the cell.
Did you determine whether DNA methylation was important in the presynaptic cell or in the postsynaptic cell in glutaminergic synapse scaling?
We did not, in these studies, determine that directly. Figuring out the mechanisms is a question for the future. I would just say that our data are consistent with the idea that there were changes in the glutamate receptors in the neuron, but it's still something that we need to work on.
Yeah, I think I would add to that that we have
John Hablitz.
Some indication that the changes are in the postsynaptic membrane, and we did not rule out the possibility of additional changes in presynaptic mechanisms, but there was not any direct evidence for that from the studies that we did.
Did you identify which genes are affected by the DNA methylation that's relevant in this context?
We did not. That is a big open question. It's a fascinating question. One way to approach it that we are beginning to do some studies on right now is to use whole genome types of next-generation DNA sequencing to try to determine which out of the 23,000 possible genes is having its transcription changed, which of those 23,000 genes may have its methylation state changed, and try to approach the question at that level. That is using a genome-wide approach in transcriptomics and methylomics. We expect that there are going to be a lot of genes that have their transcription changed, and it's going to be a complicated thing to try to figure out kind of at the bioinformatic level. So it's really still a a pressing question, and it's going to be a complicated answer. I feel reasonably comfortable with that at this point. There is one specific gene that's particularly intriguing that has been shown previously to have its transcription changed with alterations in DNA methylation, and that's a gene called ARC. And ARC, the gene product, is known to regulate glutamate receptor trafficking in neurons. And so ARC's transcription is known to be activity-dependent in neurons. It's known from other experiments to be regulated by cytosine methylation that is itself activity-dependent. And so ARC is one specific candidate that's pretty intriguing at this point as something that might be contributing to this cell-wide regulation of glutamate receptor trafficking in response to alterations in DNA methylation.
David and John, thanks for speaking with me.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, thank you.
That was David Sweat and John Hablitz discussing a paper published in the June 23rd issue of Science Signaling by Meadows and colleagues. You can read that article online at stke.sciencemag.org. The Science Signaling Podcast is a production of Science Signaling and the American Association for the Advancement of Science, advancing science, serving society. If you have any comments or questions, you can write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and AAAS, thanks for listening.